Okay, so in a moment, as we've had M. Night Shyamalan on the show this week, we wanted to do a kind of like a one frame back special mixed with weekend watch list TV movie of the week.
Yes.
But M. Night was our guest. You heard, hopefully you heard most of our conversation with him in take one. Anyway, we had 5 or 6 minutes longer with him, and we touched on some very, very interesting areas, I think. I hope you agree. So here's some more as a take two bonus with M. Night. You've been making films for 30 years. Yeah. Is the process of making films, getting them financed, telling the stories, is it getting easier or more difficult?
I don't know. It's quite as linear as that, or as binary as that. I do movies in an unusual way for the last 9 years. Kind of, I pay for them myself, and then I kind of reintroduce it back into the system, and then, you know, a major studio releases it. And that's primarily, that relationship is done because I'm trying to do very unusual things and risky things, both in the tones and the structure and the casting. And, I love that everybody loves that Josh is in it now, but, you know, I don't want to ask their opinion about whether Josh should be in it, you know, and hear the pros and cons of it and say, you know, should it be XYZ or something like that? And so this structure helps me to be daring a little bit and also come at it for the right reasons rather than, you know, I'll make money if the movie makes money. I like that.
So if this had come from the studio to you, it would have been a very different picture?
I don't think that it would have genetically ever existed. You know, everything about it is atypical. A music movie, a pop star, you know, writing an album, you know, all that stuff, the humor, the tone of it. So much of it is discovery, the discovery of Salika, the discovery of Josh, the discovery of Ari. All of these things are the reason to come, the discovery of the music, the tone. And so that's kind of a little bit at odds with a systemic kind of development process, which is more about, hey, that XYZ worked. This is a similar version of that, so it should work.
Do you ever wake up and think, yeah, but there's safety in IP, you know, I think you'd make a great James Bond director, you see, so I'd quite like to see that film.
Yeah, that's a childhood love, you know, for sure. I do think there's incredible safety in IP, and we need the comfort of things we know. It's something that, you know, it just brings us joy to return to something that gave us joy before, and that we understand. I want a cheeseburger, and we go to a restaurant and get a cheeseburger. I love cheeseburger, so I'm exactly that person. So I understand that and the need for that. For whatever reason, what drives me is not that. So I both love cheeseburgers and all that stuff, but I'm also an adventurous, you know, eater as well. And so there's room for both. I need a great cheeseburger. Oh my God, that's a great cheeseburger. And hey, let me go to a restaurant and I don't know what I'm going to get. Wow, that combination of tastes is so cool. So I'm doing something in that world, and I hope there's room for the restaurant that doesn't have a defined cuisine.
So there's a father-daughter relationship at the heart of your film, and there's you and your daughter being Lady Rebel, another father-daughter relationship. It's interesting, and parents listening to this will be thinking, well, I construct all kinds of ways of keeping my family close, but you, now you kind of, you work with them, you know, they're in your movies, they write the music for your shows, and your other daughter, Ishana, has done The Watchers, and I think did I see a poster for The Watchers in your film?
You did.
You know, this is, you're a very clever guy.
You know, I don't know if it's any different than, let's say, you know, the Curry family, where Del Curry is the dad and played in the NBA, and then there's, you know, the two sons that play, and then they practice together and play together, that the joy of learning something is intensified when you're doing it with people you love. And so you stick with it longer, you get over the hurdles more. And so you're gaining in that process of becoming talented, and because you're with your family. And so it's very, very normal. We ran into Denzel Washington's family while I was here in London. And his family has actors, directors, producers, like all his children were there, and they were hanging out. And I was like, wow, this is very similar. that, you know, you're trained in the family business and you learn it. So his son is a wonderful actor, as he was.
No, it's fantastic to speak to you. Thank you very much indeed. Do you know what you're working on next?
I do. I do. I mean, I have an idea. I would say I'm engaged to the idea.
But not married yet.
I would say I'm engaged. Yeah. And I say that, even if I say that, I feel like a guy who's like hedging. but I'm, you know, very seriously committed to this idea.
M. Night Shyamalan, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, brother.
Okay, so we're going to look at his M. Night back catalogue. Would you say oeuvre or would you say back catalogue?
I think oeuvre is good, actually, because he is definitely an auteur with an oeuvre. I mean, there is definitely such thing as an M. Night Shyamalan film.
Okay. Fill us in on M. Night.
Well, obviously, rose to prominence on the back of Sixth Sense. And I remember there was that thing, you know, it was the gag about, you know, if the plot has a twist, they remember the script. And everybody thought about M. Night Shyamalan after Sixth Sense was, you know, the great master of the twisty plot. He, you know, his work had been compared to the work of people like, you know, David Cronenberg on the one hand and The Twilight Zone on the other hand. And what's remarkable about his filmography is that he has made a very large number of films, some of which have been hugely successful, some of which have been hugely not successful. And I would say that he is one of the directors who the difference between his best work and his worst work is most astonishing. So on the one hand, he has made really great films and really great films throughout his career. And he's also made really terrible films pretty much throughout his career. So there's something very intriguing about somebody whose scattershot approach can have such a wide-ranging result.
So we asked for your, it says best and worst, but I think what we mean is favorite and least favorite.
Yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan films. And at the and at the end of this, we will combine it into our weekend watch list feature, and then Mark is going to give you the definitive five you'll love and the three that you will hate.
You're going to give me your suggestions and I'm going to correct you.
Correct. That's the way it works. Rich Walker says, favorite is The Village, followed by Unbreakable. Lady in the Water is totally underrated. Worst is Old. It was just awful. Mm-hmm. Emily Lind contributes, I wonder if I'd have liked The Village more had I not thought, oh, I hope the twist isn't, insert twist here, seated in the cinema before the trailers had even started. Had it been by any other director, it probably wouldn't have occurred to me that there'd be a twist at all, which is a very interesting point.
Yeah, exactly.
Robbie Carnegie, favourites, Unbreakable, The Sixth Sense, The Village, least favourite of those I've seen, The Happening. Ben Bradford, I really liked Signs and Glass, and the TV series Servant is very dark and twisted and funny and quite addictive. Also, I'm probably the only person that has a soft spot for After Earth.
Yes, you are. You are the only person.
Reese says Signs is his best work, and he hasn't yet managed to top it, though Knock at the Cabin is the closest to date. Terrific atmosphere, wonderful performance from Joaquin Phoenix. I wish The Visit was scarier because I loved the idea, just lacked genuine horror. Chris has chipped in. Best would be The Visit, The Sixth Sense, and Signs. Worst is The Happening. There we go. And someone who appears to be called Get Framed. Best three, Signs at three, Sixth Sense at two, and Unbreakable at one. And the worst, Knock at the Cabin, number three, After Earth at number two, and the worst, The Last Airbender. I'd forgotten.
Hey, finally somebody mentioned The Last Airbender. Okay.
Best twist, The Sixth Sense. Worst twist, The Happening. Lindsay says, Unbreakable is my favorite, but I'm generally quite the fan. I love Knock at the Cabin. I also really enjoyed the much maligned Old. It's fun and, for me at least, very
rewatchable. I liked Old. Yeah, I thought Old was a much better film than some people gave it credit for.
Mark Elms has given us a top 11.
Okay.
So starting at number one, The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, The Village, Glass, Wide Awake, Split, The Lady in the Water, Knock at the Cabin, The Happening, and at number 11, Old.
Yeah, people don't like Old.
Gareth J. Lewis, Sixth Sense and Unbreakable are top tier, but he really angered me with the twists in The Village that I left him alone until Split and then that reveal, and I just gave up on him. Using the same shtick just takes you out of the film. Mark Stewart says The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable still hold up really well, but Glass is a really underrated gem with a very different take on a superhero movie. So I think it's almost like a burden, isn't it? If you're known for the twist, instead of just being surprised by a twist, everyone is looking for it from the word go, which is a problem. So thank you for those. Top five and bottom three, which do you want to do first?
Well, let's do bottom three first, because I think it'd be nice to end on a, you know, on a top note. Incidentally, one of the things that list that the series of correspondence you've just read out demonstrates is exactly what I was saying at the beginning, that the scattershotness of the great ones and the bad ones is all of, because there is a number of titles there that appeared in people's favorites list and their least favorites list. So it whatever else you think about M. Night Shyamalan's movies, he has made many of them, and they have proved really intriguingly divisive, and you will struggle to find any of his films that do not have their champions. How brilliant that somebody said, I quite like After Earth, and somebody else mentioned The Last Airbender. I thought we were going to get to the end of this without anyone mentioning The Last Airbender, which is remarkable. So, look. Of my own, and you said, you know, obviously this is to do with favorite and least favorite. So let's do the three least favorite first. My third least favorite is The Last Airbender, just because it's a mess. And I remember when it came out, and I went to see it in the paying cinema rather than preview audience thing. It was just like, what on earth is really? Wow. Like, okay, fine. Really bad. Now, the second worst, and this is something that people get off their bikes about a lot, Lady in the Water. The Lady in the Water is I think, one of Shyamalan's most ill-judged films. And the thing that people go is, critics don't like Lady in the Water because there's a character in Lady in the Water who's a critic and he's unpleasant. To which the answer is, that is one of the many things about Lady in the Water, along with director's own casting of himself, which just makes you think, okay, this is just infantile score settling, and that's not the worst thing about the film. The worst thing about the film is the whole of the film. I mean, it's a terrible movie. It isn't, however, as bad as After Earth, which is just an absolute catastrophe of a movie. Just preposterously dull, utterly up itself, completely without any sense of interest or tension, and just a big bloated... I mean, I'm kind of surprised that Shyamalan made a movie that dull, because he generally isn't dull. He can make movies that are bad, but a film that's that bad. So that's the worst three. However, when we get onto the... Do you want to leap in and defend any of those?
No. In fact, I haven't seen, and I'm wondering whether I should go and see After Earth now.
You really should. You really shouldn't.
Is that like a post-apocalypse thing?
You know, Simon, even to begin to explain the father-son struggles of After Earth would be... Yes, you remember the John Travolta Scientology movie Battleship Earth?
Yeah.
It's worse.
Oh, okay. That bad.
It's really, really bad. Okay.
I won't watch it then.
So then if we get into, I think, the top five, and at number five, The Village. Now, I did an onstage with M. Night Shyamalan when The Village came out, and it was a BAFTA Q&A, and BAFTA audiences can be a bit snippy and a bit sniffy. And I saw the film for the first time in the room with them before I had to get on stage and do the interview with M. Night Shyamalan. And I remember thinking, I hope I like this film because it's going to be quite hard if I don't.
Yes.
And I did. What I didn't think was it was a twist film, because the point is, the twist, in inverted commas, happens in the middle of the film. And then the rest of the film carries on playing. So it's not so much a twist film as okay, fine. That's the thing. But now the drama has to continue. And what I liked about it was that it wasn't a last-minute revelation. It's not a Sixth Sense thing. It's a sustained drama about what if this world that you're seeing isn't the world you think you're seeing. It's a different world. how does that change what you think about everything you've seen up until that point? So I liked it and I'm going with it. Number four, a film which again gets some kind of bad reviews, Signs. I remember seeing Signs and having a conversation with Kim Newman about it. And Kim saying, you know, it's in that breed of science fiction films that take science fiction seriously or take the idea of science fiction seriously, that it's a film made by somebody who is not thinking of the genre as a genre. They're thinking of it as a way of discussing a kind of existential idea. And again, okay, I know that Signs disappoints some people because it's not The Sixth Sense. But actually, I think Kim's right. It is a science fiction film with ideas and important ideas. And I think it's a worthy contender. Have you seen either of those? Did you see Signs?
I think I have seen very little of Mr. Knight's back catalogue. I'm only realizing this now.
And you didn't see The Village?
No.
Okay. So number three, Glass. I think Glass is a great film. I think Glass is a really, really good film. And I know it's divisive, but I think the way that the characters play out in Glass is really smart. I think the way you think it's building up to something and then it ends up in a way which is very, very different to what you'd expect. I don't want to spoil anything. I could tell you about a great conversation I had with Kim Newman about why the ending of Glass is so funny. But I think Glass is a really smart film, and I think it's hugely, hugely underrated. At number two, and you have seen this, Sixth Sense.
I have indeed.
What do you remember about Sixth Sense? What did you like or not like about it?
I think what I appreciate about it is the fact that when I look back on it now, that I managed to get to. I mean, I didn't know the twist, so I saw it before it had been explained, and I don't think I was just going for the ride, you know. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'd never seen a film with a twist like it, so I thought it was an extraordinary film. I thought it was thoroughly enjoyable, and I'm glad no one spoiled it for me.
Yeah, I also think that one of the things with Sixth Sense is that when you watch it again, knowing the twist, it's not unsatisfying because it's like, yeah, okay, that's clever. That works. You know, there are some films which once somebody's given the gag away, it's like, okay, well then, but I don't care anymore because the whole of the rest of it is just an exercise in not doing. But I think Sixth Sense is really good. The cast are great. Bruce Willis is brilliant. It's really well played. There are a couple of real scenes of horror in it. There are a couple of real scenes of horror. I mean, the car crash and there are some moments in it that are really, really squishy. And yet it manages to have a kind of ghostly singularity to it. So, Simon, what do you think's my number one?
Unbreakable?
Yes! Well done!
Well, I'm just looking at all the favourites that people have voted for. Which you haven't mentioned yet.
And the only thing I'd say about Unbreakable, and the only thing that makes me almost not want to put it in the number one spot, is because it is, to use that phrase, the smart choice. I told you once about this thing. I was in Cannes doing Newsnight Review.
Your favorite thing ever.
Exactly. And this guy said, "Do you know that game Smart?" And I said, "No." He explained it to me. He said, "It is the most middle-class game in the world.
Okay.
It exists only in middle-class, situations." He goes, "Here's how it works, okay? Mm-hmm. The smart choice is not the obvious choice. It's not the wrong choice, but it's the choice that makes you go, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, so I'll give you the obvious one. Who's the best Beatle?"
Okay, well, this is a ridiculous question, but I would...
What do you think the smart choice would be?
The smart choice will be George.
Exactly. And in a nutshell, you now understand the game. And it is that petty and that stupid and that irritating But the fact that you got George means you understand the game, because basically deep in your dark heart, your dark North London heart, you're middle class. And so, yeah, the thing with Unbreakable.
Not that deep. You know,
no, that's right. It's not that
top to bottom, surface. Top to bottom.
Well, whatever. Listen, you and me both. I was going to say middle class, middle aged, middle brow, but we are not in middle age anymore, are we?
No, old.
Okay. But yeah. The only thing that makes me flinch slightly about Unbreakable is it's the smart choice. It's the one that you go, oh, yeah. But there's a reason, because it is actually his best film.
And why is it his best film?
Because, well, for a start, it didn't take a bunch of money. And it wasn't a huge hit. So it was like kind of, it was sort of dismissed to some extent. And then people going, why didn't Unbreakable work? That's a really interesting way of approaching, you know, stories about superheroes, if you want, and, you know, infallibility and all those kind of things. And it's so dramatically well constructed, but it's always the, like, if you said, what's William Friedkin's best film? Okay. The smart choice is Sorcerer. Okay, the obvious
your
choice.
I'm pointing at the album.
Yeah, but which of course was a massive flop when it came out. Well, Unbreakable was not a hit, but Unbreakable was the film that anyone who loved and understood cinema went, I actually think Unbreakable's pretty good, and it's just well made and interesting, and it's got a good idea at its core. And you know that in Glass, I think. You know, anyway, cool. There we go. That's my M. Night Shyamalan verdict.
Thank you. So if you have any thoughts on this and want to chip in, you can email correspondence@carbonamayo.com, even though it's going to be Sanjeev with Mark next week and Ben Bailey-Smith the week after that. I'm back in the chair the week after that, I think, unless I'm not, you know, unless I've discovered that... the beach life is the life for me.
Simon, you are never going to discover that.
Do you not think so?
No, you're not a beach life person.
I could be a beach life person for a short period of time, you know, like maybe a couple of hours.
Yeah, exactly. Then, you are so not a beach life person.
No. Okay, so it's Sanjeev, which will be great. That'll be a lovely thing.
It won't be as great as you, Simon.
Okay, that's also the right thing to say. Then it's Ben Bailey-Smith the week after that, which will be great, but also...
But not as great as you, Simon.
And then I'm back in the chair the week after that, which will be a lovely thing. Thank you very much indeed for listening. Get in touch. correspondence@codamo.com.